Thank you for coming and joining us today. I'm Tim Arcuri. I am the semiconductor and semi-equipment analyst here at Cowen, and I'm very happy to have Applied Materials with us. We have Bob Halliday, who's the CFO of Applied. Applied has, of course, been through a lot in the last 23 months, having gone through the Tokyo Electron merger, having the Department of Justice deny the merger, and now having been back to sort of ground zero in terms of how things looked prior to the merger from both an industry perspective and from a company perspective. So very, very pleased to have Applied. And I guess the first question that I'll ask, and then I have many more, of course, is given what you've been through with Justice and with the merger and all the things that you maybe weren't able to do the last two years because of the merger, maybe can you spend just a couple of minutes telling people what you learned throughout this entire process and how this process is going to help you change the company going forward?
Sure. Thanks, Tim. I found it noteworthy in the same sentence Tim used the phrases Department of Justice and ground zero. So if you look at it, I guess I learned a lot about the legal process. We learned Tokyo Electron and each other. We learned a lot about each other. We didn't learn in detail about each other's technology or price or anything because there's legal issues on that. We learned how each other's operates. We probably gained some insight into how to manage our own supply chain because they do a great job on that. Cost structures we knew pretty well, but we learned some more on that. And then we did a lot of soul searching internally about the ways to grow the company. So that was a sidebar on our own process. So I'd say that how to grow organically and inorganically, we did a lot of work on.
So Bob, one very big picture question that I asked Lam, but I think is sort of relevant, is that if you look at all the digital semiconductor companies, so you look at TSMC, you look at Intel, you look at all the memory companies, and you take analog and you sort of strip that out, the cumulative margins of the device companies are meaningfully higher than the cumulative margins of the equipment business. You look at ASML. ASML gets much lower margins than you would think that they would get, given that they have an almost monopoly. I don't want to use those words in such an extreme. And your margins aren't really as high as you would think that they could be. Lam's margins aren't as high as they could be. So can you talk just from a big picture perspective about that balance and about how much you think you can improve gross margin either through new product development or through cost initiatives or through going to your customer and saying, "Look what I'm doing for you. Pay me more"?
Sure. That's an interesting question. So if you compare and contrast the device companies to the equipment companies, slightly different business models I'll speak to and then how can we improve ours for our semicap industry, right? So if you look at capital equipment companies, we don't consume a lot of capital for capital investment. So if you look at companies like Applied, capital investment internally is about equal to depreciation. So we don't suck up a lot of cash flow for capital investment. The semi device companies, particularly if they're growing, are much more capital intensive. If you look at foundries, some of them are up to 50% of revenue on CapEx. So from a cash flow point of view, we're actually okay in terms of generating cash. If you look at gross margins, we can be lower because we buy a lot of metal, plastics, configure it, and then ship that. So it's stuff we buy and we do final assembly and test. In terms of Tim's real question, value proposition within semicap, and is it the right value? Should it be greater value? I think everybody in semicap would agree that as a provider of equipment that's really technology enabling, there's great value we provide. So should that value be distributed differently? We would argue yes. So the real question is, well, how do you realize it and how do you realize it with your customers? So if you look at our customers, they buy equipment to get equipment that produces production, that's a COO benefit, cost of ownership benefit, productivity, and they get the equipment that's differentiated, provides device performance and yield. It makes the chip better, and it provides better yield. So if you can provide equipment that provides differentiated performance on device performance and yield, that tends to be more valuable equipment. So what you see is that type of equipment really drives market share to high levels. So if you have differentiated non-commodity equipment, we tend to have high share and higher margins than that. So the win-win for us and our customers is to provide differentiated equipment. So if you look at where we try and get high share in differentiated equipment, and I think our customers will be happy to share that value proposition with us. So rapidly iterating or getting highly differentiated products is a big deal. In terms of the process for doing it, you have to introduce new products and realize that value, and then we can take cost out over time pretty effectively on the product cost.
Great, thanks. Can we talk about what the focus is of the company here post-merger? It seems that people had these aspirational numbers, including myself, what the earnings would look like post-merger, and you know, you put a model up of $2.40, which then we adjusted downward because of FX, but then we dreamed about a number much, much larger than that, and that got people thinking that the stock could have a 3 in front of it. And now we're back to your financial model of $1.70, now in fiscal 2017, which understandably has been pushed out a year because this merger took a long time. But $1.70, I get this question nonstop, and we actually talked about it a little bit before, but they say, well, if it's $1.70, it's just, it's interesting, but it's not that interesting given that the stock's already at $20, $21. So there's got to be something beyond $1.70 that we can sort of dream about. And if so, how do we really get there? So can you address what the focus is of the company to, A, get to the $1.70, because you're sort of behind model to actually get there. And then beyond that, what are your aspirations beyond that?
Sure. So if you look at the $1.70 was in a $33.5 billion environment, and we did say in a 37, even that existing model would be 215. So incremental profit drop through is pretty powerful. If you look at that model, we're kind of on track to the revenue line. We're pretty close. So we've gained share in semi. We've gained share and grown the TAM in display. And we've grown the service business. The business of ours that's the smallest business and not performing is solar. But it's not a high profit business. So revenue line's kind of on track. I'll talk to the model, then I'll talk beyond the model, right? Because you're really asking beyond the model.
Yeah.
In terms of the gross margin, we went from 40.9 up to 44.1. The model was 44.5. We've taken a half step back this year. We're in the 43 and change. I think we'll get to the 44.5, but it won't be next year. And the biggest single thing that's hitting us is mix next year. We're gaining share in etch, which is lower gross margins. And next year in display, the mix will be a little bit bad because we sell equipment to make displays for TVs and small displays like your phones. Next year, we're going to have unusually high shipments of equipment to make phone displays. It's lower gross margin for us. And then it goes back to more normal mix after that. So gross margins, they'll come back. The expenses, a little over. But I think it's manageable. Tax rate, we'll beat the tax rate. It was 22% in the model. We're at 19%. We'll get to 18%. And the weighted average share count that drives the EPS, we'll get to that. So there's a fair amount of levers to get closer to the $1.70. But your real question, Tim, is what's beyond the $1.70, right? So if you've met Gary Dickerson, our CEO, Gary's all about how to grow the company. So we can drive efficiency below the revenue line, but you got to grow the company, right? So if you look at Applied Materials before the merger, we were driving profitable growth. To drive profitable growth, you have to drive the revenue line. You have to drive efficiency below the revenue line. So I focus on the efficiency stuff more. So we invested pretty heavily in product development in SSG, display, services, and new stuff you don't see in new markets. And you can go see this in our P&L. R&D expense as a percentage of spending and as a total has gone up from 12, 13, 14, 15. We're investing in products. typically in our industry, it takes about 3 years to get something out of R&D and move the revenue line. We're just starting to see those products now. Within our existing markets, we've invested in R&D to move the revenue line, and we think it will, okay? The second thing is we've invested in new markets that take more like 5 years to move the revenue line, and that stuff's just starting to percolate next year. Now, some of that new disruptive stuff is in existing markets. For instance, in display, about 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, we started investing in an encapsulation tool. We never made an encapsulation tool in our life. We invest in this disruptive technology. We'll probably have $150-200 million in revenue orders this year from that new technology. It's pretty significant, something we never did. That's kind of a disruptive new market, but in display. What's the point? Within existing markets, we have been investing to goose the revenue line, and within new markets, we're goosing it. We think we can outgrow our existing industries by some share, new products, and some new markets. The next thing is, can you improve the gross margin line? Yeah, I think we can. We talked about that a little bit. There's several things that drive the gross margin: mix, price, value, and cost. Mix between segments, mix within segment, value proposition to customers, and cost. We're going to optimize the mix between segments because we're going to grow SSG faster than solar, for instance. Much higher gross margin profile. The mix between segments helps us. The mix within segment is hurting us right now because etch is a higher mix within semi, but we think we can get that overall segment back online. Value proposition, we think our new products are going to be valuable to customers. Cost reduction, we can do pretty well. The gross margin should grow and leverage the operating profit. If you look at us, our incremental profit on the semi business is kind of 50%, almost 50%. If you get some volume and you do okay on gross margins, 50% drops to the operating line. In services, it's about 40% incremental. In displays, probably about 40%. If you get a little revenue lift from your markets and share, pretty big leverage down the operating profit line. Then the tax rate, we think will drive down to the low single digits eventually, next few years. We'll buy back stock because we generate a fair amount of cash.
Do you think if things went exactly as you hope, do you think that by fiscal 2017, do you think that at current wafer fab, if the market didn't grow, do you think, and I'm not, you know, pushing you, I know that your model's $1.70, but do you think that you could possibly do $2, or is that an exceedingly aspirational number? You would need market growth to get there.
I think we'll be directionally on that path, but I don't know that you'll be at that in 2017. I mean, look at the numbers. Last year, we did like $1 something, $1 and change, $1.05 or something, $7. This year, we'll do, according to the Street, I don't know, what is it, $1.24 or something, whatever it is. That's mostly self-help. Wafer fab equipment's up a little bit. We gained some share, grew the service business. With the share count going up, we went up about, you know, $0.18. We're going to go up more than that in 2016 and more than that in 2017, probably. Directionally, we're going up a fair amount in a pretty flat WFE environment.
Can I ask just some math around the buyback? Of the current cash, you have about $2.8 offshore, $1.8 onshore. If you can repatriate some of the offshore cash, you've certainly learned something in this merger. You were out in front. Given that this was an inversion, you had done lots and lots of work around tax. I'm sure that you can employ some of those structures now. You can probably repatriate some of that $2.8. Let's say you can repatriate $1 billion, maybe half, something like that, right? The $1.4 billion onshore goes to maybe $2.5, something like that, onshore. You generate about $750 million, sort of normalized, but your dividend is about $500 million. The free cash flow onshore is basically consumed by the dividend. You have, and if you know, you have to keep a $700 million cushion for cash onshore. Even if you raise $1 billion in debt, you only have like $3 billion total to basically play with. So the math would say, okay, after you get through this $3 billion buyback initially, that the question that I get from people is, well, that's great, but the buyback is going to step down afterwards. And so once we get through this initial buyback, that it's hard, that it will be hard for them to sustain that sort of buyback in the out years, because they will have raised the debt. Unless they're willing to take on a lot more debt, it is difficult to sustain that sort of a buyback. So how do you answer that?
Yeah, I think, well, I don't have a final answer going through it the last 4 weeks, but I'm hopeful we can repatriate more foreign cash than you're talking about, because we have some intercompany flows from what we do in the U.S. to overseas that we might be able to accelerate those payments and use our own cash to get it home. It's almost like a loan, but it's not a loan. So I think we can bring cash home more efficiently than that. So I think, if you do $3 billion in 2 years, that's $1.5 billion a year. I don't think we'll stay at $1.5 billion a year probably, but I think between dividend opportunities and buyback, I don't think it's going to be as low as you think.
Okay, so the point being, some step down, but not much.
I think there'll be a step down. I don't think it'd be as significant as you say. There'll be some step down.
Okay. Can we then talk just a little bit about the market, and maybe talk about how you see overall WFE, how you see the business in the back half versus the first half, and go through foundry and memory and how you see those trending this year and also next year?
Yeah, I think I'll compare and contrast first half, second half next year. This year, my guess is this year's $33 billion WFE, but part of that lower dollar value is because the euro and the yen have been devalued. So if you look at kind of constant dollars, about a $34 billion year, pretty healthy. And if you look at the mix, I think DRAM was pretty strong in the first half. Second half is probably a little weaker on DRAM. Pricing is a little bit off. And our customers kind of balance their portfolio spending, particularly people like Samsung. So I think NAND is stronger in the second half and probably has momentum into next year. Foundry is usually a little stronger in the first half and a little weaker in the second half unless they pull in. This year I think second half's a little stronger than first half. The question is how much stronger? The foundry customers talked about a reasonable amount of reuse and capital efficiency. I think some of that is opportunistic. Part of it's, the cheaper currency thing. Part of it is opportunistic. We use from 20 to early stages of 16, 28 to early stages of 14. Some of that you used up. If you look at fab utilization, it's running pretty high right now. So I think there's some of that, but I think it's transitional. So I still think foundry's probably healthier in the second half, particularly if you get some 10 nanometer tools pulled into the end of the calendar year. The question is how much better. Logic, it's okay. We're not a big logic. They don't spend a lot on companies like us.
Bob, just back to the question about the.
And I think next year's up.
Next year's up, you think? It just sort of seems like we're in this environment where things are going to grind upward. It isn't an explosive upward move, but it just is over the next couple of years. It seems like things are going to keep on getting just a little bit better every year. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that the industry is less cyclical. I think the average cross cycle is bigger. We used to model our industry and our company at $30 billion WFE cross cycle. Now we're modeling, and we feel comfortable, at 33.5. So I think it's sort of a new normal and less cyclical. So if you're in an industry that's growing, but not hugely growing, but it's less volatile, it's an industry you can probably generate more cash cross cycle, frankly. So if you optimize your cost structures, optimize your tax structure, you can increase your margins over time and your cash flow. So if you go look at the three primary lines of the P&L, which you folks focus on, I think you can grow the revenue line reasonably well with the industry's okay and some growth, and I think our position will be a little stronger. I think their operating margins can improve, partly through the drop-through on the revenue and partly through efficiency. And I think the cash-generating ability goes up. So I think those are interesting characteristics of the industry where you can get better stuff dropping down at the cash line than the industry revenue growth. And then if we're investing currently in new market stuff and that kicks in, that's additive. And if you could do something inorganic, that's interesting.
I think, so if you look at the underlying dynamics of the industry, which you just talked about, one of the things, not only has maintenance spending gone up, but if you look, for example, in DRAM, so DRAM should be a much more sustainably good business going forward for a multitude of reasons. So all these things support you being able to, you and everyone else being able to sustainably generate more cash. So that would sort of argue that you should run with a little bit different capital structure than what you have today, that you're not levered enough. So can you talk a little bit about leverage? I know you've said that you're going to take on about $1 billion in debt, maybe just a little bit more. But can you talk bigger picture about sort of what the limitations are for your mental capacity for debt? Because you should, if you believe what you and I both believe, you should be a lot more levered than you are.
Well, I think it's a sequence. I think we should strive to reduce the share count and increase the dividend. So I think the share count is the first agenda right now because we're a little bit more behind on that. And I think the sources of cash to do that are most efficient is to get our own cash home from overseas without paying taxes, if we can avoid that. So I think we're optimizing that one first. The second thing would be to look at more leverage. Now, we have existing debt holders, right? So we're very sensitive to their interest too. So we think our credit rating isn't impacted by reasonable amounts of debt, right? And so we could do that. So I think the internal cash is kind of bigger, maybe bigger than you think, in terms of transferring the foreign cash back. And then the debt, we'd be happy to look at doing that. But I think we're sequencing internal cash, debt, and then potentially more debt.
So what do you think that your ceiling is right now on debt? Could you do $1 billion, $1.5 billion and not impact your credit rating?
We're going to have that reviewed by the credit agencies. I don't know exactly, but the guess is current credit rating is 750 to $1 billion, and a KLA credit rating is like another 750 to $1 billion because we're slightly higher.
What do you think, speaking of KLA, since you actually brought them up, what do you think about their, not just using them as an example, but what do you think about a levered recap generally? Do you think that is something, just given where the stock is and, you know, given what's happened post this deal, do you think that a levered recap is something, I mean, you know, you're in a little bit different situation than them, but is that something that as you look out, is that something that interests you for Applied?
Well, we're through the industry and Applied are going through kind of a transition. So if you look at capital structure, and you guys are experts, your total risk profile of a company is a function of your capital risk and your operating risk. The operating risk in the industry has probably gone down somewhat because if you're less cyclical, it's less problematic. So you could probably take on some incremental capital risk. I don't deny that logic. So the question is then how much do you do and how fast do you do it? I think I'm open to more debt. Whether we do a big bang, I'd have to go talk to the board probably on that one because it goes to the total risk profile of the company.
Great. Can you talk about some of the share gains in 3D NAND? You have one of your major competitors talking about being 90% of all critical applications for 3D NAND, and yet you guys are clearly gaining share, not just in 3D NAND, but in etch and deposition overall. So can you talk a little bit about whether the share gains are in contrast to what's being said by them, or is everyone coexisting and sort of taking share from each other in, you know, different areas?
So everybody's confused in the market share. So I'm going to try and unconfuse half of you, and the other half will have dessert, right? So if you want to look at market share, our customers' wafer fab equipment is equal to the total revenues of our industry. And this year it's about $33 billion they spend. So that's the total revenues of our type of industry. So the first thing you look at market share is what percentage of their spending do they spend in places in which KLA, Lam, and Applied compete? So in Applied's world, in 2012, I think they spent in places where we compete about 52% of their spending. That's gone up almost a point a year the last several years, and we're close to 55%. Now, Lam is also in that space in KLA. So first, where they're spending the last several years has directionally been more positive for us, whereas for a number of years it was down because this whole thing about materials and structures has replaced the universal litho world, right? So litho, track, MOCVD, a little smaller percentage of where they spend, right? So that's good for Lam, broadly speaking, Applied, TEL, sort of KLA. Now let me segment it. So if you go look at it, the things that have been growing fast this last couple of years are etch, CVD, slower inspection, slower implant, strong epi, PVD where we compete. So where we live is a pretty good place. Where Applied has put a lot of focus the last few years, etch, CVD, some in inspection, display, and then optimizing the service business. So then you'd say, well, what percentage of the total customer's pocketbook do you get Applied? In 2012, of all the dollars our customers spent, we got 17.6% of that for new equipment, 300 millimeter, plus 0.2 point for 200 millimeter equipment. I break them out because we track them in different P&Ls. The 200 millimeter is in our service business. In 2014, we went from 17.6 to 18.8. So we got 1.2% more of the total pocketbook, and we went from 0.2 to 0.3 in used equipment, another tenth. So we got 1.2 plus 0.1, 1.3% more of their total pocketbook. You can tie out the data. So then you'd say the third way you look at share is head-to-head share by product. Etch to etch, CVD to CVD, implant to implant, PVD, epi. We compete in about 8 products. In 2014, Applied Materials gained share, and it's in the public record, in etch, CVD, epi, PVD, RTP, lost a point of share in CMP, lost a couple, 4 points, I think, in inspection, and lost a couple points, 3 points in implant. So in our biggest markets, we gained share. And overall, we gained share because we gained share in WFE. Our closest competitor is in a market that is growing somewhat faster than the average of those. Etch and CVD are growing well, but we are gaining share within those markets, okay? Now they compete in dielectric and conductor etch. We are doing predominantly, you can look at the antitrust stuff, Applied is mostly in conductor etch, TEL is in dielectric etch. So we've been mostly successful in conductor etch. They compete against us in conductor, more against TEL and dielectric. And then there are Korean supplies too. So our peer across the bay, they're doing well as a company, but in head-to-head and conductor etch and CVD, we've done okay.
Thanks for that. Bob.
Some of you had dessert.
So just one sort of big picture question. Back to the question about wafer fab equipment and how do you grow the company? Gary is very focused on growing the company. And particularly now that this deal's fallen apart, you're getting beaten up every day. Bob, we need to get the earnings up. We need to grow the company. So. Are there opportunities for you? One of the biggest pools that you don't play in, obviously, is litho, and that's a sort of an optically difficult market for you to get into. But are there areas that you can maybe pick off around the edges? Obviously, EUV, I mean, that ship has sailed and might never intersect where we think it is going to intersect, but that ship's already sailed, so you really can't play there. But there are some other areas such as imprint, e-beam, other things that are potentially going to be used in either complementing EUV or competing with EUV that maybe you could play in. So, are there opportunities for you to maybe shake things up and get into litho, for example, which is the biggest obvious area that you're not in today?
There's ways for us to generally expand into new product opportunities in, not litho specifically, but perhaps around litho, but also in the other markets too. So litho specifically, I'd be surprised if we got into litho, but you need some other enabling technologies for EUV, and we might get involved in that. And that's in new market stuff up in the top right for us. It's a possibility. We've been putting money into it for a couple of years, and we'll accelerate the funding of that this year, okay? In terms of other things, there's new markets where we don't have product offerings in deposition, where we're going to probably enhance our product offerings. And then if you look at, so organically, we're continuing to invest significantly in etch, deposition, and inspection, and we think within those we have opportunities. E-beam, we have strong e-beam technology, but we haven't commercialized it well. Hermes in Taiwan has got e-beam technology, and I think their market cap's probably $2-3 billion, right? So why can't we be a bigger player in e-beam, and customers are probably going to use more e-beam, right? Because if you look at structures, how do you inspect these vertical structures? Two-planar optical wafer inspection is getting tougher, right? So I think we'll expand our product offerings more broadly in places around it. Deposition, inspection, etch, we kind of have the hardware now, and surrounding the EUV, but not litho, but not litho specific.
Great. Thanks.
There's another interesting thing I think Lam talked about a little bit today. We've been talking about it too. Doing inspection is getting tougher. So process control is getting more interesting too within the process tool. Because we gather a lot, a hell of a lot of data. How do we use it? But that's in the early innings.
Can you talk, one of the biggest developments in the last 12 months really has been the Chinese government's massive infusion of capital into the semiconductor industry. There are a lot of device areas where the government is either outright buying companies, SOEs are investing in companies. I think you're going to see a lot more happen in the next 6 months. They're trying to completely vertically integrate a smartphone supply chain. Some of that money, that's a big opportunity, a big pool of money. That must make your eyes very wide to sort of get some of that capital to come your way. How do you think about that? Or at this point, is it more of a trickle-down thing where it'll ultimately make its way down to you, but it's not obvious how you can grab some of that today?
Well, we just had a weekend of one of many on strategic planning, and one of the topics we brought up that we have to do more work on is the Chinese strategy. So I'll give you my impressions. One, we haven't seen much on the ground yet on this. We do believe it's going to be real. My speculation is that it'll be a little bit more, within semiconductor, it'll be a little bit more device-centric than equipment-centric because it's actually harder to build the supply chain and infrastructure for equipment than it is for devices because device companies can come to companies like Applied and Lam and help them get the fab going, right? Whereas we got to go to a lot of different suppliers. It's a more complicated supply chain. The second thing is, so if you go in semi, it's not uncommon that people enter semi through the memory side because memory devices are a little easier than logic and foundry devices. So my speculation is they might pursue semi-memory and then start to cascade down into they buy more equipment. And would they do local equipment? They haven't got a lot of that right now, and it takes a while. But I think it'll happen. I think it'll be over time. The good news for us is probably in a few years there'll be extra capacity added.
Well, there would seem to be some opportunities from a multi-chip packaging perspective. So there are some front-end technologies that are making their way into the back end that the Chinese government wants to establish that capability in-house and in China. So there would seem to be maybe some opportunities there for you to sort of directly access that either in a joint venture fashion, something like that. That would seem to be maybe an area where you could potentially grab a piece of that pie.
Yeah, it might be. Packaging is getting more interesting because if you go look at it, I believe, I'm not an expert, people are going to eventually start downloading huge amounts of, they are, but even more video data. So then do you start stacking DRAM and do you connect them through advanced packaging to be more effective? So then the whole packaging thing gets kind of interesting, right? So.
Well, I guess we have time for one final question. And I guess my question would be, Bob, if in 3 to 5 years we're sitting here and things have not gone the way that you had hoped, if the stock hasn't done a whole lot, what's the biggest risk to that happening? So when Gary's pounding on you to get the earnings up to grow the company, what's in the back of your mind the thing that, well, Gary, yeah, but? What's the but?
I think we'll execute pretty well within our envelope. What we're going to try and do is expand our envelope within our space in new spaces. The biggest envelope in which we occupy now is semi-cap and display. The semi-cap industry turns down. It's hard to overcome that. Now, I don't think it's going to happen, but that would be headwinds, right? The two things that could give us extra boost or extra drag are how you drive the revenue line in semi-cap, and if the industry turns down, you got a problem. Two, how much traction you get in 3 to 5 years in new markets. Because if you drive the revenue line, I think we can squeeze the margins.
Well, that's all the time we have. Really appreciate you being with us, Bob. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thanks, Tim.